Welcome back to the Children's Hour. Today on the show, we're learning about World War II. Before the break, Somewhere Over the Rainbow was sung by Ingrid Michaelson, which originally appeared in the hit movie The Wizard of Oz, released in 1939, just before the start of World War II. And in any war, countries put a lot of work into getting and transmitting information that could help their side win. From using spies to secret codes, there's so much to know about how the U.S. and its allies used information to fight the war.
Why were spies so important? Because they got important information from the Axis and Allied powers. They found out where they were going to put bombs and how to break their codes. Spies also helped the U.S. avoiding major attacks. The U.S. cracked the German code, but the Axis powers never cracked the U.S. code. The Germans used a cryptography machine called the Enigma. In contrast, the U.S. developed a code from the Navajo language. The U.S. was able to capture an Enigma machine and figure it out, but Germany and Japan never figured out the Navajo code.
Navajo code talkers were U.S. Marines that made and used codes to keep secrets. In 1942, Philip Johnstone had an idea. His idea was that he could base codes on indigenous languages, so he picked the Navajo language. When the Navajo men were trained at boot camp, they called them code talkers, or wind talkers. Code talkers went to different islands for battle. Code talkers also helped U.S. forces coordinate during battle. They called airplanes hummingbirds and submarines big whales. President George Bush gave an award to the Navajo code talkers for their help.
He was born and grew up on Navajo land, a child of the mesas and canyons so grand. The Holy Ones looked upon him with care. Nature provided him warmth, water, and air. Code talker, you were chosen as a warrior. Code talker, for you there was no barrier. Code talker, you are like Manuelito. Code talker, victory was your only motto. He was at school one day when he heard they needed him. He devoured every word. He answered the call without hesitation. He left school to help the whole nation. Code talker, you were chosen as a warrior. Code talker, for you, there was no barrier. Code talker, you are like Chief Manuelito. Code talker, victory was your only motto. He sailed west, the route changing women took, to rouse the enemy out of every cranny and nook. His sacred language, short in deadly strife, the baffled enemy had to run for his life. Code talker, your country knows of your service. Code talker, your objective was not of Everest. Code Talker, though you are called a nation's hero, you chose to be humble, but you're still a hero. Ahyehe shinabahi dine'e nso ba'do nano tzahaki t'ado nechana tzani e bedelni.
That's Radmila Cody with Code Talkers. You're listening to the Children's Hour, and we're learning about World War II with Miss Rand Bridges' bilingual fifth graders at Alvarado Elementary School in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
The attack on Pearl Harbor happened December 7, 1941. It was a well-planned surprise attack by Japan. The person who led it was the Vice Admiral of the Japanese Navy. The U.S. military didn't respond to Pearl Harbor's call for help until the next day. This attack was a total surprise for the U.S. The Japanese sent spies to Pearl Harbor to know when was the right time to attack. The day of the attack, a soldier named Joseph detected a swarm of aircraft in the air, 130 miles away. This could have prevented the attack on Pearl Harbor, but they thought they were American planes flying in from the mainland. Little did they know, it was the Japanese. Days after the attack, Germany and Italy declared war on the U.S. This led to the U.S. joining World War II.
German and Italian citizens living in the United States were held as political prisoners during World War II, but after the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor on December 7, 1941, the U.S. rounded up 120,000 people of Japanese descent and put them into internment camps, including two here in New Mexico. Nearly two-thirds of them were American citizens. Years later, the U.S. government would apologize and pay reparations to the people who had been held in the camps. But it took decades for that to happen. Robin Amer and Jesse C. from Vocalo Media have more.
Chie Tomohiro and Sam Ozaki were both interned during World War II. They were teenagers in the early 40s. Both lived on the West Coast. Chie was from Portland. Sam was from California. Both of their fathers were fairly successful businessmen, active in the Japanese community. Both Chie and Sam described their fathers as community leaders. They were leading successful, stable lives, the kind of lives their families had come to America hoping to achieve. Until Pearl Harbor. Suddenly, they weren't model citizens anymore. They were the enemy. Here's Chie describing what happened.
The FBI had selected certain people that they considered leaders in the community. Right on the day of Pearl Harbor, December 7th, 1941, my father was picked up by the FBI.
The FBI came in, ransacked her house, took, you know, went through all the drawers and everything. And, you know, I had a U.S. savings bond, a $25 U.S. savings bond. They even took that. There was something going on at the church, and my mother and I were out. We were so naive. Can you believe this? We thought that since my father was very fluent in English, that he was taken to help interpret, you know, be a translator. We were so naive, that's what we thought. Well, when we found him in the Multnomah County Jail, you know, locked up like an ordinary prisoner, then we knew he was, you know, not there to help.
They were treated like prisoners of war. He didn't return until it was April of 1944.
So he was separated from you and your mother for 3 years?
Yeah. My father had lived in this country since 1903. And because of the law saying that no Asians can become naturalized citizens, he did not have citizenship. And so when the war came, he automatically became an enemy alien. The FBI thought that by taking the leaders of the community out in a way that we would be helpless. We wouldn't be committing sabotage or whatever. I don't know what they thought we were going to do. They thought they were taking the dangerous people out of the community.
It was a similar story for Sam's father.
He was sent to a camp in Santa Fe, New Mexico. We would not see him for possibly a good year, maybe year and a half.
We, you know, never dreamed under the circumstances that we would have to be evacuated and interned. And especially since we were born and raised in this country and we had citizenship, we thought that the Constitution was going to protect us. And it's very interesting, the notices that were pinned up on the telephone poles and on the walls of buildings ordering us to report, you know, to the assembly center, it said, to all people of Japanese ancestry, aliens and non-aliens. They didn't want to say citizen. They knew they were doing something that was unconstitutional.
They did not have the facilities to house 120,000 persons right away. So what they did, they took over racetracks, fairgrounds, places where they had some kind of facility where they could house temporarily 120,000 persons.
I was 1 month away from graduating high school when we were ordered to the Assembly Center, which was the Pacific International Livestock Exposition Grounds. That was a very horrible place. It was one huge barn, and we were all forced to live in the areas where the animals were displayed.
They treated the horses better than they treated us because these racehorses are very valuable pieces of property. It's nice to visit a horse stable on occasion for a few minutes, but when you have to live in a stable and you smell the horses all the time, that's not so pleasant.
I think that the lack of privacy,
the total lack of privacy,
was the worst thing for everyone. The only way anybody could get any privacy was hanging the army blankets that we were given. There was only a wall, not a wall, but a barrier, I would call it, between the families. And so the whole barn could hear you if you had a family quarrel or anything like that.
We were in the Santa Anita racetrack for approximately 6 months, and that gave the government time to build a more permanent-type concentration camp.
They called it relocation center. I call it a euphemism when they call it a relocation center, but we were given numbers on the tags. From there on in, we were in numbers. We were first told to stuff these ticks with straw, which were our mattresses for our army cots, and we were assigned a 20-by-24 room. They called it apartments, but they were rooms for each family. I happened to be lucky because I was an only child. Our next-door neighbor, there were four kids and mother and father in one 20-by-24 room.
In our case, my two sisters, my mother, had a very small unit, maybe 20 by 15 or something like that.
There was no furniture in the room. The only thing that we had was a pot-belly stove.
And I worked as a lumberjack, cutting down trees and cutting the branches into smaller pieces so they could be used to burn in the pot-belly stoves. That was the only warmth we had during the winter.
Actually, there were no chairs, no benches, nothing. No closet, of course. No place to hang your clothes. After a while, you know, we found lumber and empty boxes and brought them in to sit on.
And there were some people who were very handy, and they created cupboards and desks and things like that, but I had no skills and there was no real lumber to build these things.
That piece originally aired on Vocalo 89.9 FM, Chicago Public Media.
He said my name is Nakashima. I am a proud American. I came here in 27 from my homeland of Japan, and I picked your grapes and oranges, saved some money, bought a store until 1942. Pearl Harbor and the war, came the relocation orders. They took our house, the store, the car, and they drove us through the desert to a place called Manzanar. A Spanish word for apple orchards, though we saw no apple trees, just the rows of prison barracks with barbed wire boundaries. And we dream of apple blossoms waving free beneath the stars, till we'd wake up in the desert, the prisoners of Manzanar, Manzanar. Blossoms waving free beneath the stars, till we'd wake up in the desert, still prisoners of Manzanar, Manzanar. 50 years have all but vanished. Now I am an old man, and I don't regret the day that I came here from Japan. But on moonless winter nights, I often wish upon a star that I'd forget the same sorrow that I felt at Manzanar, where we dream of apple blossoms waving free beneath the stars.
You're listening to the Children's Hour, Kids Public Radio. We'll be right back.
The Children's Hour is now producing weekly educational modules to go with every episode, thanks to a grant from the Albuquerque Community Foundation. You can support this effort too. Go to childrenshour.org and click donate. The Children's Hour is grateful to the Outpost Performance Space in Albuquerque, New Mexico, for hosting our recordings. Many thanks to New Mexico Arts, a division of the New Mexico Department of Cultural Affairs, and the National Endowment for the Arts for their support of the Children's Hour. The Children's Hour is grateful to the City of Albuquerque Cultural Services Department and the Urban Enhancement Trust Fund for their support.